we did that all day Saturday, and then I broke loose on that.
I'm going to call to order this meeting on the Education Committee for the House on Monday, March 16th. And Representative Gorsuch and Representative Frederick, if we could have you go up to testify. And then Richard, if you will. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2655. And Richard, would you kick us off, please?
Happily. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2655 directs the State Board of Education to adopt specified standards related to student education records. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 3 amendments, which do a number of things that the speakers will speak to. The only thing worth mentioning is that the committee previously heard this on February 9th, and there is a lot of testimony from that day on OLIS that is relevant to today's hearing as well.
Okay. Thank you. Gentlemen, whoever wants to kick it off.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Gorsuch. I am the House Representative for District 49 in Multnomah County. Good afternoon to everybody. We are here today to speak to you again about House Bill 2655, which is the Student Assessment Bill of Rights. So this bill provides, well, we hope it provides some relief for parents and students that wish to opt out of high-stakes testing. We note that experts are divided about their value and the resulting data and its use. This approach in the bill provides Oregonians with the tools we feel they need in order to express their own feelings about the value of these exams that takes such a large amount of both educators' and students' time and resources. So every student should have the right to know prior to a statewide standardized assessment the following things. They have a right to be excused from high-stakes assessments for any reason, when they will be expected to take the exams, the purpose of the exams, and what information will be tested, how results will be interpreted and how data will be distributed, when results will be available to students. Exercising your right to opt out of high-stakes tests will not result in the denial of a diploma. So, just to close here, in this climate of underfunded schools, too few teachers, too few school days, certainly, and too many students per class, I believe we owe it to the students and parents to be transparent about the tests that will take up so much of their time and their school's resources. The stakes are indeed high. Let's make sure students and parents have a clear sense of their educational rights. And then hopefully we can continue working for what we all hope for in Oregon, which is a true first-class system of education that fosters creativity, lifelong learning, and a commitment to student success. So thank you very much. That concludes my remarks, and I will defer to my colleague.
Representative Frederick, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2655. In fact, I've asked to be one of the chief sponsors, to be added as a chief sponsor for this particular bill, as I hope it will be amended. I'm going to speak primarily to the amendments collected in the Dash 3 amendments before you. It appears to me that Section 3 contained in the amendment does a better job of prescribing an opt-out process for students and families to use to excuse students from statewide summative assessments than the bill I originally proposed with the same goal. My original intent was this. We currently allow excusal from this process for religious reasons. The tests that are currently about to be implemented are generating strong objections based on ethics, both parental and professional, and based on credible concerns about the quality of the intellectual and professional discipline applied to the development, administration, and interpretation of the tests. As Representative Gorsuch noted, there's nothing close to a professional unanimity regarding the educational value or, for that matter, the validity of these tests, with a substantial number of credible professionals' voices raising alarms about potential harm to children's educational motivation and psychological health from these tests. I do not see where religious objections ought to be privileged over ethical, intellectual, or professional ones. I also support transparent rulemaking and addressing standards for how educational records are created, used, kept, and divulged. This amendment prescribes less, that is, leaves more to the rulemaking process than the original bill, but I continue to support it. I believe that the Dash 3 amendment addresses my concerns that I introduced as House Bill 2714, and I ask you to adopt the Dash 3 amendment and pass this bill to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Any questions?
You did such an amazing job.
But I do have one.
Excellent.
All right.
So how will, I guess the first question would be, how will the opt-out work? What will that process look like? What will that conversation be like potentially?
You mean in terms of paperwork or the test?
Opting out of the testing. I mean, is that something people are going to see up front? How will that work?
Yeah.
And then one of my concerns is when you have the teacher of classroom X preparing for tests and going to the test, what do the students who've opted out do at that time? And is it equally productive time?
Vice Chair Springer and members of the committee, I believe, as is stated a little later in the bill, the main focus then would be to shift those students to study hall sorts of situations where they can study other topics that they are currently involved in school. I think that's probably the key thing, is that at least I've seen here, I believe that would be the focus.
Chair Springer, members of the committee, if you look at section, I believe it's section 3, section 6. Section 6, you will find that it says school district and public charter school shall provide supervised study time for students excused from the statewide summative assessments as provided by this section. excuse me. What we're dealing with is the idea that we want to make sure that students and parents know that they have this as an option, and that they can in fact opt out, and that there's a system set aside so that the students can be doing something, and that if it is in fact they cannot be denied a diploma. We are unfortunately hearing a number of parents tell me that their students are being told that they will not get a diploma if they opt out of the test. That's not true, but that's what they're being told, and it's frustrating for me, because I had a town hall meeting this Saturday of about 20 people or so, and that was one of the major discussions that we had.
And Madam Chair, so it's really important for people to realize that we're not then saying that they have free time, that they can just do whatever they want. It is designed, as Representative Frederick said, to keep a structured sort of situation going on and to still apply their time to schoolwork.
So, along those lines, then, I'm thinking of high school in particular.
Yeah.
Regardless of what has occurred, K-12 to get there and tests that may or may not have been taken, how do we assess? Is it just through proficiency then, graduation?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Or how is that done now?
There are a number of ways to do that. Proficiency is one exam. There are folks who also, there's a possibility of using the test scores in terms of SAT, AP. All of these things are possible ways of assessing. It doesn't have to be the summative assessment that is being set up right now, as it's not supposed to be a graduation exercise. So that's part of it as well.
And last question, I guess, then, is how, and first of all, I'll get a take from you, and then I'm going to ask somebody from ODE to come up. How will ODE deal with the data gathering for report cards? For school report cards?
That one.
Students not passing tests? How does, because I would fear that all of a sudden a school is a terrible school. Mm-hmm. On paper, because they have multiple students opting out.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may, I mean, the assessments are one thing. The regular grades for a student should be a separate entity. And I think you would, like Representative Frederick said, you'd want to create something where you assess them in a different way. But in terms of their grades, I would think that that would still be consistent in terms of, you know, all students going through the process.
So, actually, my question is about the report card for
right.
the school.
Yeah. Oh, I
report
see.
Card. The school. And there, you will see, actually, within part of this, we talk about that this is the first of all, the summative assessments. There's a good question and an important one, I think, we'll be asking a number of times about whether those particular assessments are valid or not. And that's one of the key elements for me. There's the idea of making sure, and we voted on this to some extent last Friday, to say that we were not going to tie those scores to either the ratings or rankings for the school, the teachers, and the administrators, and that would continue within this situation as well. That at least it should. In my view, and that's the plan. You'll see that there's a. I haven't memorized this, but I know that there is a. If the rating on a school performance report is affected by the number of parents and adult students who excuse students from taking a statewide summative assessment as provided by this section, the Department of Education shall include on the performance report an indication that the rating was affected by a federal law requirement. A brief explanation of the federal law requirement that affected the ratings. The rating in the school would have received if not for the federal law requirement.
Okay.
So there's an attempt to try to speak to some of those issues there. And let me also say something else. I think it's important for us to understand how well schools are doing, whether that is tied to a high-stakes test situation is another question altogether.
Okay. Thank you. Representative McClain.
I guess there's two things. One, you just told about the language in this actual bill, and then you also talked about the relationship with some other endeavors, including something we passed out of the committee last Friday, which was asking us to have the moratorium for a year on the high-risk test as far as being used in that way. And then the Department of Ed is supposed to be asking for that waiver from the federal government so that we have that in place. And it's just for 1 year. And there are others who have, you know, have done that before. But my other issue was the fact that you were asked a question about, so how else do we tell how kids are doing? And I want you to maybe give us a little bit more information about why did you want to bring this here? Because I think it addresses that very question. What are some of the other ways that students are tested, and how do we know how they're doing and how their schools are doing?
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, that really begs the question of whether testing is effective. Mm-hmm. And does it really test what we're trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that tests tell us anything about what the child has really picked up in their classroom. I think if you have a true test, you have a final test at the end of the year that's about all of the topics, the approved topics, that the school district has to cover in a year's time. That's the kind of test that you do, mm-hmm. not something that comes necessarily from, you know, the Department of Education or some business group, whatever. I think it should be based on the level of education that they got at the end of the year. And it should be based on what the students need to learn, not based on the students need to learn a certain thing because the test has to be taken, which I think is the absolute problem. So there's nothing wrong with a test at the end of the year, but testing repeatedly and testing to test, I think, is what we're trying to get away from. And I think a lot of students are being turned off from education because they're being tested and retested. It needs to be more relevant. Mm-hmm. That would, so I would put it one test, end of the year, and have it relevant to the true curriculum that they're dealing with.
Okay. Madam Chairs. There are several answers to that for me. One is there are a series of other tests that actually give us a sense of what the school is doing. The NAEP For instance, the SATs, the ACTs, things that regarding AP, the IP, some of the IB tests, give us a sense of how the schools are doing. And if we're talking about this in terms of how the schools are doing, that's one thing. We're certainly not doing it in terms of how the students are doing, because these are not being used as diagnostic tests for the students. Right. These are being used as diagnostic tests for a curriculum, a broader school effort. So we have a list of other tests and other performance evaluations that we can use as well, and I think we should be using those if we're going to be effective. I am concerned, but the particular test that we have put forward, quite frankly, is, I think, developmentally unsound. Especially when it comes to the younger grades. Mm-hmm. I had several people this last week. I had a principal and a parent who took decided to do three questions on the third grade test and could not answer one of them, and they were not sure that they answered the other two correctly, because they felt that they were just developmentally inappropriate for third graders, for the adults. They couldn't deal with it. It wasn't a matter that they were dumb adults. They were just poorly written and developmentally inappropriate for third graders. So we have that dynamic that's involved as well. I have a number of folks within my neighborhood, North and Northeast Portland, who are opting out. And there is a significant parent group to do just that. But in the past, when they've opted out, they have been penalized. The school has been penalized. The teachers have been penalized. And, in fact, the neighborhood has been penalized because these folks opted out saying that they didn't think the tests were appropriate. That brought down the ranking of the school, which then brought down the ranking of the school in the real estate community. And so we've had this kind of a cascade that has been created by way of these tests, inappropriate, because I don't think the tests were really telling us very much.
And if I, oh, Chair,
Representative Springer,
Representative McLean, and I can tell you from speaking to teachers when my children were back in grade school, the frustrations that some of the teachers expressed about the types of testing that we're using, which gets back at what Representative Frederick was saying. This one teacher needed, in her opinion, to do more with English and reading. And so they had some extra time, and so she was taking some extra time and putting it into that, and was pulled into the principal's office and was told, absolutely not. Anytime you had free time, you had to be teaching related to the test. Well, that, first off, that begs the question of who's correct there, and secondly, it reinforces that idea of just focusing too much on the test. Test should be the last result, not the first. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank the representatives for bringing this forward. A lot of us seem to be on the same path here, and that's gratifying, no matter where we're from, and that makes it all that much more exciting. In a strange way, it seems like the testing regimen is keeping our kids from learning, you know, which just doesn't make sense to anybody in the process here. So I, again, appreciate what you're doing here and look forward to continuing this discussion in other parallel directions as we go. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Sorry, Representative Weaver.
I have also appreciate all the attention that you've worked so hard to bring to the subject of testing and assessment. So. But I do have some concerns about the approach that we're taking, and I hope you'll bear with me, and the chair will bear with me. I think, if I understand correctly, this bill is talking about what to do about one particular test. Is that correct? But I've heard discussion about
looking at the impact
of all testing, and we're just focusing on a summative testing in this particular one, correct?
Chair Springer, Representative Reardon, it says very simply, we're talking about the statewide summative assessment.
Okay, so yeah. Not formative, not other testing. Good.
Yeah, it's in Section 3, Subsection C.
Okay. Okay. It was hard to tell from some of the conversation, so I just wanted to be clear. So, follow up. Do you see a value in summative testing as at all?
You want to answer? I'll get it next.
Chair Springer, Representative Reardon, yes. Summative testing has a particular value. But it has a value only if the test is, in fact, considered a valid test that helps things. If you have a test that you expect 60 to 70% of the students to fail, I'm not sure what the value is there. So that's a concern. But it does help us generally get a sense of how well programs and curricula are, in fact, helping students learn. So summative testing clearly has a value. We do it in a number of other places, a number of other ways. Mm-hmm. I do question the particular test that we have in front of us right now, and I also have some significant concerns about how it's being used, and we'll talk about this in another bill today, but the cost that's associated with it, not just the financial cost, but the time and curriculum and psychological costs that I'm seeing for third graders and other kids right now.
So,
go ahead.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Reardon, the thing to, as you know from education, is you have to have some sort of an assessment, and summative testing is you know, I think very necessary. But to go back to what Representative Frederick said, it really needs to be a true assessment. If we expect a large number of our students to fail, I don't think that's a true assessment. When I give a test in a class, I have expectations that most of my students will pass, and I hope that they will pass, and I try to give them the tools that they will need to get there. And so it seems to me that this is not the right kind of, summative assessment, and that's my big concern. Thank you.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. You said something, I think it was Representative Fredericks, in your testimony, I believe, talked about that there had been something in this bill. Maybe I'm an amendment behind or something. But I think it addressed one of my concerns about possibly with too much opting out that there might be a skewing of the results, if you will, from whether it be on a district level or an individual school. Could you elaborate a little bit on how that will not happen? Or will we... How do we get good comparisons?
It's a section 8 of the bill, of the amendment on the bill itself, and if the rating 8 and it's 8 A B and C, not section 8, but number 8 of the bill, and it's under section 3. The bill is basically wanting folks to know that any rating that is produced is produced with the acknowledgement that there have been a number of people who have opted out, and that so that there's an explanation of the rating that school would have received if not for the federal law requirement. So that's what this is an attempt to say. If we have these kinds of opting out situations, if you're going to rank a school based on the test scores, you need to acknowledge that they come with a caveat that maybe not everybody took the test.
I'll look at that more carefully. That sounds like recognition that the federal government is once again helping us. I mean, not facetiously. But,
yes.
Do you have another follow-up?
They're here to help. It's more of a statement?
Sure.
Okay. Last is more of a statement. It's a concern. I have trouble supporting this because I feel like I have a couple of districts that I represent that have dedicated their time, their resources. They've educated the parents. They've talked to the kids. And they're also nervous about the potential low scores on the test, but they've worked hard at it. They're ready to go and willing to take the test. What do I tell them that, hey, you're just, you know, you were just, I feel like we're not kind of letting them down. You know, they believed what they heard here, that this test was coming up. They prepared for it. They worked hard on it. And now, all of a sudden, now they're saying, well, it's really not that important. People can opt out. I personally think it's important to get the results from everybody. I think we, you know, if you're, maybe it's a military background. When I got on that ship, I knew that we were all in it together, and none of us were going to escape, especially from a submarine. And so we were in it together, and we saw it through, whether it was good results or maybe we needed to change course a little bit along the way. But I just find it really difficult to pull back on the requirements and just let people out of it. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time with that, but it really does bother me. I feel like it's, you know, we're changing the message. And the trouble with that is we do it a lot in education where I think people in the classroom, in administration, get to a point where they believe that, hey, if I don't like this program, I'll just hang on a little while longer, and it'll go away, and it'll be replaced with the next great idea. And that's makes it hard to really advance the cause of education. So it's, I don't know if you can, that's, I don't know if it's a question or a statement. Well, you've been around education
perhaps
long.
Perhaps a question. You and, we could talk a great deal about
question.
That. There, Representative Springer, and Chair, and Representative Reardon, there are a lot of responses to that, and we should have a longer conversation about it. Mm-hmm. Because I do understand what you're saying. I also understand when we have a situation where something is not living up to, not even close to living up to its promises, we need to reassess it. And at this particular point, I have a real difficulty with the tests. As somebody recently put it, educational malpractice is how I'd put some of the tests that we're talking about at this point, where we are talking about the tests are, in fact, not going to help us. They are not going to help the kids individually. They are instead seen as a data point. And I don't see the kids as a data point. I want to see much more. We do know how to do this right. And we're deciding that we're going to do it a different way for whatever reason. I think it's appropriate for parents to say, this isn't helping my kids. This is, in fact, creating a problem for my kids. We are spending a lot of time. I'm glad that your school districts have managed to actually connect with this in some way, but I would be willing to say that in talking with a number of folks who are teachers who are from the districts that you actually represent. They live in my district and they come to my town hall. They are there's certainly not a universal support for this. In fact, I'd say there's a significant undercurrent of teachers saying we don't see this as an appropriate thing to do. Not because they want to move along to another item. They've looked at the test. They've looked at the curriculum based around the test, and they haven't seen. They've found it wanting in terms of helping their kids. So helping their students. So I think it's appropriate for parents to be able to say, wait a minute. I'm not going to send my kid into an 8-hour period of time of taking a test that's not going to really help them at all. And that's what I'm seeing people say right now.
And if I may.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative, Vice Chair. The other thing I would say is there are lots of different things that go on in policy where we think something was wonderful, you know, 5 years ago, and then we switch it. That's just part of what happens with bureaucracy. State, county, local, it happens a lot. And I don't think that preparation for this test, when it has so many problems, is something we should do just because we've started down the road. There are plenty of parents who think this is the wrong road to be on. So I don't think you should do it just to do it. Thank you.
And we have two more people signed up to testify, or two more people to testify on this. And Representative Barreto, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think I feel like we're kind of shooting at a moving target here, and I'm a little bit, you know, I feel like I'm challenged with Smarter and Balanced every time I come into this committee. But we just adopted Common Core a while back, not too many years ago, and this summative testing is basically testing based on that curriculum that typically is supposed to start through K through 12, but now we're only a couple years into this, so now we have this summative testing that is testing these students that should have been learning from here to here, but they're just learning in the last couple years. Is that correct?
Sure. Chair Springer, Representative Barreto, that's part of the discussion, exactly. Now, we've done this before, so this is one of the concerns. But yes, I think we're going to have, I think it's Friday, we
yep.
have a full day talking about Common Core. I think there's some significant questions there. But more importantly, regarding these particular tests, the tests are being challenged now across the country. Both this Smarter Balanced and the PARC tests are being challenged across the country because there's a real question about whether they effectively give us good information about how well students are doing and what we want them to know. And the good news about the test, and I will have to say this, is that it's not just a fill-in-the-bubble kind of test. Now we do have some discussion about writing things. The bad news about it, or one of the bad news is that you have third graders who are now spending a lot of time learning how to use iPads in order for them to use the test, to do the test, because that's very important for how well they do on the test, and whether that's an effective way of determining how well they understand something is another story altogether.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you have a follow-up?
Well, yeah. So basically these tests then are in essence before their time. We're not prepared, ready for these tests, or these tests are simply way beyond the ability that we even expect to achieve 10 years from now if we continued with this curriculum, you know, over the next 10 years. I guess that's what I'm questioning, is whether these tests are valid now, or whether they'll be valid in 10 years based on starting children younger and getting to that point. That's what I meant by moving to
right. Right.
So Representative Springer, Representative Barreto. That is, in fact, the sort of theory behind the test, and we've had some Common Core discussions and curriculum in the schools for a time. Some of the teachers have been, a lot of the teachers, Representative Reardon's, a couple of his districts, actually have had some pretty intensive exposure to the Common Core approaches. There are issues developmentally. There are issues about the validity of the questions, whether they in fact tell us what we want to know, even within the Common Core system, because it's a question on who wrote not only the Common Core ideas but also who's writing the tests. So those are some of the things that I continue to hear about, and frankly, it's every other day I'm getting a new concern about the tests, and especially the validity of the tests. But there are others who believe that they are valid, and that they provide a challenge to teachers and to students, and that by challenging them, that's supposed to make it more of a motivation for them to do well on these kinds of tests. Challenge versus threats versus embarrassment is another story altogether.
Just one more quick follow-up. Yeah, so are these tests now, are they in a process of evolution, or are they the finished product and you can't go back, or are they subject to modification?
Representative Springer, Representative Barreto,
the fact they, as I understand it, they're still in some modification role, but they have already put them out. We are actually acting as the beta testing group, or have been, for the tests at this point. And I know you can talk with the Department of Education and others about where they are in terms of whether things can be changed within the tests. And I think they probably can. No one's going to do. No one will put out a test otherwise. They are not like a. Necessarily like a textbook. Once it's published, it's forever. I think they do adjust. But there's a question, some serious questions by other both test makers and academics about those particular tests. A letter came out this weekend of, I think, 2,000 folks who are academics and who do a lot of the testing, saying we question whether this test is at all valid. So that's part of the issue. How does it connect with the Common Core standards, and whether the Common Core standards are developmentally appropriate for third graders or fourth graders or all the way through is another question as well.
And Vice Chair, I would just add that we're dealing with a state that has incredibly low attendance in terms of full days. We've cut our days repeatedly in the state of Oregon, school days. And so we've cut days, and we're dumping very, very intensive work on top of students and teachers. I think that combination is probably the worst thing that you could do in a situation like this.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both very much. Next, we have Joel Fisher. And then after Joel, I will call up somebody from ODE to answer maybe some of the specific questions on report cards. Thank you.
Chair Springer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, here on behalf of Oregon Business Association, to express some concerns that we have with this bill, particularly the piece around opting out. On a side note, the former third grader in me is pretty excited about the opt-out part.
Former third grader.
We've heard lots of people who have concerns about this test, and you know what this opt-out feature. The former teacher in me, I used to teach, would explain it to a third grader like this and say, "Okay, we've been measuring. You know, we've got this 5-foot bar, and every year we measure and we see if you can make it over this 5-foot bar. And this year we're going to raise it to 7 feet. And okay, you're probably not going to be able to jump 7 feet this year, but you're still jumping 5 feet and you're still doing pretty good." And whereas that student, you know, when they first see that we've raised the bar from 5 feet to 7 feet and be scared and have concerns, you know, as a teacher, I would explain it to him like that and say, "Hey, you're still hitting the 5-foot mark, and we are now going to try and set this goal a little bit higher and see if you can't make that in a couple of years." And the business people I represent would look at this opt-out provision. You know, they're concerned with things like metrics, outcomes, and performance, and say, how is it that we can, you know, reasonably measure what it is that our schools are doing? I grew up in a low-income neighborhood, and I look at this and say, if everybody just gets to start opting out, how do we have an accurate measuring stick to say, here are two schools, you know, that are, you know, right now, for measuring accurately, are doing, you know, demographically the same, and this one's performing better, and this one's not performing as well. That gives us some really good data that we can use to try and help make sure that our schools are all receiving a good education. So we have some specific concerns about what that opt-out piece does. Thank you for your time.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you. Now, my understanding of the summative testing is kind of end of the K through 12, and then formative testing is year to year to see how they're measuring. And then up until now, it seems like we've had OAKS, the SATs, the ACTs, and those forms of testing that would basically give a broad evaluation of where the student is at that point. So if we opt out of this smarter balance and just go back to what we already had, wouldn't that already give a good evaluation of where the students and where the schools are in what we've previously had?
Yeah, so we think that the Smarter Balance is that we support the Common Core State Standards, which are aligned with the Smarter Balance test, and we think that it provides a much better, that it's a much better test that would provide a better measuring.
Yeah.
I guess, Joel, my question is this. You know, I agree that, you know, challenging folks is, you know, a good idea, and challenging students is something I hoped I did every day I was in the classroom. But to get your analogy to work, the one that you gave about the 7 feet and the 5 feet, I've got to teach them how to do 5 feet. There was some kind of a Fonsberry flop or something, or, you know, when you're going to the high bar, or something like that. But anyway, I mean, I've got to teach them how to do the run. I've got to teach them how to do the 5 feet. And I certainly should have an opportunity to teach them how to do even higher, 7 feet. So to make your analogy work for me, you're in favor of the core standards. You're in favor of the smart balance tests. But how do you connect that to the school experience? What has to happen to make sure that you have kids who are actually learning the standards and are actually having an opportunity to be successful on the test?
Yeah, my Chair Springer, Representative McLean, my understanding is that there are some things happening to provide those supports to teachers, and we would be supportive of those.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Joel. And Jan, can we have you come up? There were a couple specific questions, then we have one more person.
Vice Chair Springer, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb with the Department of Education. In an effort to not ramble, I would just ask you to repeat the questions you have. So
I don't know. Well, and I think I heard it up here in a couple different ways. Talk to us about how it would practically work at the Department of Ed with some students opting out and then information test results going to ODE, the state report card, on schools, not students. How would that work, and are there adjustments that ODE would need to make or could make?
Vice Chair Springer, members of the committee, on the report card, as this committee passed last Friday, I believe it was, we're working on having a year where schools are not rated. When we go back to rating the schools, we'll have this new element. I think the proponents at first wanted to get rid of the 95% requirement that the feds have of participation. And just to remind you why that was there, I think there was some concern on the part of the feds that schools would only test their brightest students and they would discourage other kids from being tested. And really, they were trying to assess the schools and how well the schools were doing in delivering education. And if there were kids being left out, they wanted to know about that. And so that's why they put that 95% threshold in the law in the first place.
Can I ask a question
about
that?
When the group discovered they couldn't get rid of the 95%, they thought the second best thing is, well, let's explain this to parents so they understand why their school is not being rated as high as we thought it was. You know, their experience with their school is probably that it's a great school, and here is a state report card saying it's less than great. And so what Section 8 does of the amendments is to have a little explanation on that to say, if you're, you know, your school does drop a rating, to explain why to parents so they can understand that and judge, you know, whether that's a concern to them. Does that answer your question?
I think so. Representative McLean, did you have something?
The state of Oregon has 100%, not 95%. Is that right or not? Because in the school where I just taught, you know, there one student dropped it an entire score. So do you guys have 100%, or are you still at 95%?
So, Vice Chair Springer, Representative McLean, under No Child Left Behind, you needed 95% participation from every subgroup. Mm-hmm. And so for some schools, that meant if one child was sick that day and didn't make it, they failed. And it was a very blunt instrument to assess a school. Under our waiver, we no longer have to do 100% of all student groups, but we're still at 95%. And I'm not the assessment expert at the department, and so I can make note of some of your questions, and on Friday when they come in, they can maybe explain it better.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, thank you.
Just one second, if you don't mind.
Representative Beckert.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you explaining why that 95% rule was in there. It was, in fact, because some schools were, in fact, not testing everyone. And we had situations where they would have students who were not going to do well intentionally be absent or not available during that particular time. The concern that I keep running into is the sense of failure by schools and by parents and by kids. There's an awful lot of pressure that comes up in the classroom. And even though the third grade teachers may, in fact, try not to do that, there's a lot of pressure that I hear from students and from teachers that they have to do this, otherwise their school, their teachers, they themselves fail. That particular word is used on a regular basis in different ways, and it's troubling, very troubling. Thank you.
Okay. Did you have something, Representative?
Yeah, maybe a little bit on what Representative Frederick said, but we had a hearing on another presentation of some tests, and they were new tests, and I really didn't understand it fully when they were explaining it, but they came up to my office the next day and said, you know, this computerized testing would evaluate the student with a series of thousands and thousands of questions, but it would kind of zero them in on where they're at, and then it would just keep them about that line, but it would continually test them as far as what they knew, what they didn't know. Each student individually, you know, would be answering this, and it would give them on the outcome a pretty good understanding of where that student is in all the topics, and all they did was continue to answer questions. The computer then would evaluate those questions, whether they were right or wrong, and get them right at the level. Now, I haven't seen those folks back now, and I don't know exactly, I can't remember really who they were, but I thought, you know, that seemed to me like a pretty interesting way of testing, rather than I think the testing that we're talking about, where you get a 60-70% failure rate, it isn't necessarily a test on failing or succeeding, but it's an evaluation of where they are.
Vice Chair Springer, Representative Bredo. I know as a student, I preferred fill-in-the-bubble multiple-choice tests that never changed from year to year. That was my ideal, and I really knew how to take those tests. But even with the OAKS test or the state test prior to Smarter Balanced, the assessments were fancy enough that they were able to adjust to the student's particular answer-writing ability. And Representative Springer took the OAKS test, and so she can probably speak better of it than I can. But I know that one of the advantages of having that adjusted test is that they're shorter. They can get to the end result without taking quite so much time, and that was a good benefit of that. Plus, you know, if you were super smart, you weren't bogged down with real easy questions, which were confidence building for me as a test taker, but they more precisely hone in on how the student is doing and what they can answer.
Thank you. We need to move along. We have one more person, and we have two other bills. And Madam Chair says, let's move along.
Madam Temporary Chair.
Madam Chair says, let's move along. So Beth Ann Darby.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Beth Ann Darby with Oregon Education Association. We are very excited about House Bill 2655. We think that it will do a great deal of good in helping to take the high stakes out of testing and helping to ensure that educators have the tools they need to help students move forward with their education. I did want to just talk for just a brief moment about the opt-out procedure, because I heard a lot of questions that make sense to me that they're being asked. That's good. One of the issues that we are trying to address is that with our current opt-out, where you can opt out only for religion or disability, the districts have an inconsistent result when presented with information about religion or disability. And it has come to our attention that parents are often, in some districts, put into a place where they need to lie about their beliefs. And we think that that's inappropriate, that parents shouldn't have to lie about what's good for their kids. And so part of the thinking is to create an informed consent, if you will, within the legislation. And what the idea is that the department will come up with a standardized form that talks about the purpose, that districts can fill in the relevant information. What's the purpose of the test? How will the test be used? And how will it benefit the student? And then a parent can complete that, and then their child can be opted out without having to make some assertion about a set of beliefs that may or may not accurately represent their definition of religion. So that's what we were thinking, is to get something that was more consistent from district to district, so that parents can be treated the same no matter where they live in the state.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2655.
And move it over. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2713. Richard, if you could read it, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2713 directs the Department of Education to conduct an evaluation on the use of standardized tests in the public schools in the state. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 2 amendments, which replace the measure and mandate that the Secretary of State will conduct an audit related to use of statewide standardized summative assessments, and for the Secretary of State to report back to interim education committees no later than 15th September 2016.
Hey, Representative Frederick. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Chair Doherty. Good to see you again. Members of the committee, I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. I am here to speak to the proposed Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2713, which I spoke to you about last month. I won't repeat my testimony. I know you're glad to hear that regarding the need for the bill. The amendment does two things. It changes an evaluation by the Department of Education to an audit by the Secretary of State. What we are looking at is indeed an audit, something the Secretary of State's office does, and it does well. It narrows the scope of the audit called for by naming the statewide summative assessment developed by a multi-state consortium. I agree with the various stakeholders that standardized tests was overly broad in the initial initial bill. The amendment retains the comprehensiveness of this evaluation. That is, it still calls for it to include the fiscal, administrative, and educational impacts of the assessments on public schools in the state. And it still calls for including impacts on instructional time, curricula, professional flexibility, budgets, and administrative time and focus. So I ask you to adopt the Dash 2 amendment and pass the bill to the House floor with a do pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions? Representative Reardon.
Surprisingly, I do have a question.
That's great.
Frederick, if we were to ask everybody on this panel, maybe a couple of folks in the back room, to define for us professional flexibility, do you think we would get consensus on the meaning of that term?
Representative Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, probably not consensus, no, but I think that the professional responsibility is probably something that is that the Secretary of State's office, as an audit, would be able to at least narrow down in terms of what we're talking about there.
Would you consider an amendment that would add some clarity to that prior to sending it off to you?
Sure, I'd like to see what you have there. That would be interesting to see. Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Representative Frederick. Representative Frederick was the only one to sign up. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on House Bill 2713? Okay, seeing none, I close a public hearing on 2713. And don't go very far. And open up a public hearing.
Put this down and pick up the other one.
On 2715, Richard, if you could read this.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2715 directs school district employees or volunteers, prohibits school district employees or volunteers from posting, publishing, or making publicly available personally identifiable information in relation to the results of performance-based assessments, declares an emergency effective 1st July 2015. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which allow an exception for posting of student identifiable data if the consent of the student or the parent or guardian of the student is obtained.
Hey, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. I'm again Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland, here yet with another amendment. I originally requested House Bill 2715 to address so-called data walls on which schools, in some cases at the behest of the district officials, displayed students' test scores or other performance data with names attached, displaying comparative results. I believe this extends a culture of shame and punishment, and that it uses performance measures in a competitive and potentially punitive way, and that this reflects a profound lack of information about the dynamics of motivation. I also believe that such use displays information about students to individuals who have no proper use for such information. The Dash 1 amendment before you does a better job of describing what I intended to do and not to do with this bill, eliminating potentially unintended consequences. For example, with the amendment, schools could still publicly celebrate outstanding achievements. My problem was not with the idea of celebrating achievement, but with the idea of shaming those who are struggling. I ask that the committee adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2715 and pass the bill to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any questions of Representative Frederick? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. Representative Frederick was the only one to sign up. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on House Bill 2715? Thank you. Make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Ma'am, my name is Teresa Rayford, and I'm a resident in North and Northeast Portland, have been since 1970 when I was born in Oregon. And I'm not really familiar with the bill. I'm here for a different reason, but I'm really focused on this issue with standardized testing and also the equity and equality that's provided to our children in our school systems throughout the state of Oregon. And I would just like to say that please listen to Rep. Lou Frederick, because he is from a community that has had several disadvantages historically, and those disadvantages continuously it hinders our process and our progress as a community. This same hindrance is being inherited by the new generation, and we have to at some time become proactive about the way that we not only secure their information and their safety, but that we encourage systems that are educating them and not taking away from their ability to educate. And I know that with the core standard testing, there is a lot of time that is taken out of actual class work to get ready for the testing, and that is not helping them with the disadvantage of being able to appropriately receive the education that our Oregon State education system says is an asset for their future. So please take these things into serious consideration. Don't be, dismissive because you don't see a lot of people from that community coming forward, because we are struggling. We do live in poverty, but we are counting on our children's education to be something that will bring us out of that issue, and we need your support in making it happen if you can. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Ms. Rayfield? Okay, thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on 2715. And I believe that is the last we have. Oh, my heavens, it's only 2 o'clock. We have the any other business? Okay. I just want to, again, kind of announce that we do have on the 23rd, the kids are coming to testify as to what they'd like to see in schools. And so if you have some students, please get them to Richard.
How
so
many do I
agenda.
Get?
You, Representative, can get as many as you want.
I got
that we
that
can
many.
Fill up in 2 hours and 45 minutes.
I got that many.
Good. Bring them. Okay. With that, I close the Committee on House Education. Close the Committee on...